Thank you kindly. This is Maya. Unbelievably fortunate to be protected from the full consequences of all my trying to get somewhere, trying to get away from pain. I'm an NA member in alignment with the third tradition. Well, I'm going to set my timer. I'm going to try to talk for 35 minutes. I don't usually do that. But, and I might have some quiet here and there. So, you know, my first inventory, I remembered back till I was, 3 years old. And then I eventually could remember back till I was, two. But my mom fell and hurt herself when I was two, and I remember sitting on her bed a lot. And I can't call that good or bad. It was just, I was attached to my mom. And then I remember the first couple of resentments I had, or uncomfortable feelings, anger. I don't know how to label it. But, we were getting ready to move, and my dad threw my teddy bear out. I was mad about that. Like, I thought he was making a mistake. And then when my little sister came home, they said the stork was delivering her or something. And I... Yeah, I wanted to be the first one to hold her. And, my grandmother showed up on the scene, and she was the first one to hold her. And, to me, there was something wrong with that. That's how self-centered I was. And, I remember, I was just reflecting on this earlier today, like when we would go out to eat, I would, drink everyone's water. I was a really thirsty kid. And I remember having asthma and, so bad the doctor had to come home, come over to the house and put towels on me. I think they gave me morphine once. I think that's what I heard him talking about. And then that seemed to kind of fall away, the asthma. And then I had real bad allergies, like hay fever, like really bad certain time of years. I remember in September sitting in school just, suffering like there's no tomorrow. And, when I was, in first grade, I had fallen off a friend's bike that I had begged to borrow his brother's bike, and he wasn't let me do it. I was just begging, finally let me. And I fell. I said, I'll just drive to my house and back. And I turned around in the driveway, like I said I would, and I wiped out, and I walked the bike back, and he freaked out. And, there was two other instances like that in my childhood where I was begging somebody to do something, like, let me ride your mini bike, let me jump in your pool. And I got injured on those things too. So, I was, the last inventory I wrote, that stuff came out, and it was like, I could see how it was still going on in my life, this really driven to get something and then, getting sick or injured or something. So, I remember in first grade, because of that injury, my dad came to class and was talking to the teacher, and they were talking about maybe keeping me back a year because when my birthday fell and stuff like that, because I missed a couple of weeks of school, and they didn't, which, probably is a good thing because I probably would have played the role of the victim more than I already was. I remember being 3 years old, and, my mom was, or three or four, my mom was going to go shopping, and I, they put me in the playpen for a moment or something, and so I didn't, completely freak out to try to contain me somewhat. But I just remember screaming, as if like it was just, totally devastating. Anyway, I remember in the second grade, my mom told me that I was adopted, and I went around, I don't know if I was lying before that or stealing before that, but it shook me up enough where I told stories because I had heard a story like that was not the truth to make it, sound like, my birth mother was, like did something terrible with me. And, I I wasn't too good at school. You know, I didn't really do too good at school. I was okay at sports. I was good at baseball. And, anyway, I think it was the fifth grade. I like to separate the experience from the story the mind tells or told. So the experience was, you know, I walked to the door for recess. I opened the door and I paused while I was looking outside because I saw twice as many kids as usual on the playground. And that's the experience. You know, walked the door, opened door, paused, felt some fear because I saw twice as many kids as usual on the playground. And here's the story the mind created. All those kids knew their purpose in life. I was the only one that was clueless. And part of their purpose was to watch me mess up. And, you know, I walked around with that belief. I didn't think about sharing it with anyone or saying, I walked around with that innocent misperception. But what I realized later is that, you know, I was feeling the way I felt and looking at the way people looked on the outside, and it didn't match. It's not a fair way to look at things, you know. Anyway. So I think it was in sixth grade, you know, but it was definitely by the time I was in seventh and eighth grade at a different school where I was thinking, you know, when I get older, I want to smoke pot. That was the thought. And I fantasized about that for a couple of years. And the story was, I'm not going to use anything else. And then, you know, freshman year in high school, I started smoking, and I remember like all this fear. And, you know, when I would go to get a bag, there'd be increased fear. And, I didn't get off for 6 months. I didn't feel anything. One time I was talking and I forgot what I was saying. And I said, that usually happens. You know, I must be high, you know, because I was wanting to, you know, I was really wanting, you know, to get off, and I wasn't. I, you know, even that moment, I was thinking I probably am high, but I there was still doubt. And, you know, and then one day, you know, I got a hold of some stronger stuff, and, you know, I could tell it was different. And so, you know, it was kind of clear to me, you know, okay, asthma, you know, looking back, is asthma as a kid, hay fever, you know, that first 6 months I spilled the pipe at least two or three times, you know, and people were pissed. You know, I think we were smoking oregano, you know, and, you know, it just wasn't going good, you know, and then, you know, like my friends had said I was going to be doing other things, you know, within a month, and these were like new friends. They didn't really know me. I thought they're crazy. And I started doing other things too. But, you know, by far my main thing was, you know, the smoking that stuff, you know, and, you know, things started getting bad really quick. Like, you know, I started having relationships and, you know, and feeling like huge amounts of self-pity because I didn't have anything to offer to the relationship. They would leave me, you know? And then, you know, when I was 15 at my cousin's wedding, my cousin was a little bit older than me, a few months older, and he got the idea of, you know, asking my dad for the keys at the wedding reception to go, because he wanted to go for a ride in the station wagon. So I asked my dad for the keys, you know, to get some Kleenex out of the glove box and listen to the radio. And he gave them to me, and I drove, and, you know, I was on, you know, more than just pot that night, something my cousin had and something they were drinking at the reception. And, you know, I did a hit and run at 15 years old, you know, no license. And the police came to the wedding reception and, you know, saw the car was dented. And I get in the back seat of the car, and my dad says, why are you sitting back there? I said, because the front seat doesn't open. I mean, the mom's door, the passenger side, doesn't open. And all he said was, you idiot. And no DUI, nothing. My eyes were leaning towards purple because my cousin came to get me, and I was like in the bathroom, just kind of looking at my eyes. They were almost rippling. And anyway, you know, and then I got my driver's license at 16, and, you know, I lost my driver's license for getting too many tickets by the time I was, 17. I remember, it was raining out, and my friend was filling the bowl in the passenger seat, and I said, "You done filling it?" And I went around the turn and, smashed into somebody's tree in their front yard. The kids were outside playing. I knew some of the kids a little bit, you know. And I just backed up and pulled away, and I was like a super, aggressive driver. You know, I would drive like just a real, real idiot. I was like a, I kind of want to backtrack. You know, before I was smoking, I was off base. I was stealing and lying, terrible backseat driver to my mom, and had some other attachments. But when I started smoking, things just got way, way worse. I got, I was really good in baseball, and the first year in Pony League, I made the All-Stars. The second year, I didn't. And I don't know if it was my talent was worse, but, I was showing up to games late, after doing intoxicants all night. I think they could tell I was, headed on the wrong path. That's why they didn't put me out. Our third string catcher caught for the All-Star team. I think I was better than him. I was the first string catcher. But because of my actions and attitude, that they could tell I was like, off base. That's right. And then I got caught smoking at freshman year in high school in front of the building, smoking pot. And, they threw me off the baseball team. And so I never went out for sports like that ever again. And, I hated the dealers that I was dealing with. I started at 14. I smoked for 18 years. 85% of the time I couldn't find strong enough pot. I wanted something stronger. It was not fun. It was misery. It was like serious entanglement. I was a violent bonger. It was harsh. It was filthy. The bong was almost always dirty. If I split a bag with somebody, it always felt like my bag was smaller, always. I know they were putting extra sticks and seeds in my bag. I could see it. Like, I just know it, And, one day it was, like another failed relationship and, one day I was just sitting in my basement apartment because I had a story. Like sometimes I would drive past a bar and I would think, I'd like to be in there. It looks like those people are having fun, but I'd want to go there before all the people got there. So I didn't feel like I was walking in on their thing, like I could feel like it was more like my place or something. I just wanted to get there before the crowds got there. And I really hardly ever got it together to, do something like that. But, one day I was able to see that, smoking pot, I'd usually be in self-pity in between relationships. And I would tell myself a story. All I need is pot and TV. I don't need nothing else or no one else. And then one day I saw it differently, like that pot and TV was keeping me from being, that was keeping me lonely. And then, one day I just said a prayer in self-pity. I think I was on my knees and said a prayer in self-pity, pretty good self-pity, I think, for me to be on my knees. I didn't know. It's like I wasn't, praying, let alone on my knees, that I was aware of, hardly at all. And I said a prayer in self-pity, and a couple weeks later I was looking in the phone book and I went to my first meeting. And I remember leaving the meeting and coming home. I was thinking, no one said anything to me. And that was perfect, I mean, really. If they said something to me, who knows what would have happened. I might have not come back. But, I remember one or two people mentioned something about love in the meeting. And I thought, what? you know, where's the, when I was leaving, like, where's the love coming my way, you know? And, you know, I had stuff at home, so I smoked when I got home. And, you know, I went back to the meeting the next night. And it took me, you know, a lot of years later, like, you know, about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, to realize that the second step got me to the first meeting. If it was, the second step is worded, open to the possibility that doing something different, like going to a group where people had a similar past to me would help, then, you know, I wouldn't have thought that, you know, I didn't have a good second step or glossed over it or, you know. You know, I talked to my sponsor about that just a few weeks ago, and I said, does that sound insane? He said, no. So to me, the second step, without a doubt, I would have never gone to that first meeting if I didn't think it could help. You know, I mean, like I was off work for 4 months, collecting 2/3 of my pay, you know, where I was driving a forklift for the Teamsters Union, and I had crushed my finger at work, and I thought, they're going to send me for a drug test when I go back, and I want to keep this job, you know? And so I had an idea that, you know, I wanted to get clean and stay clean for 20 years or something. I don't know, you know, why I came up with that number. But, you know, so I was going to meetings at this one place every night. They said something about, you know, if you, you know, you know, your misery could be refunded, you know, the disease gets worse, it progresses. And then I got a call from somebody that I used to, you know, deal with. He was a martial artist. So every time I would buy a bag from him, no matter how big, he would throw a kick by my nose because he robbed the drugstore in high school and he was going to sell them to, somebody's brother, older brother at school, you know, somebody that I knew from school. And the guy came to his house to buy what he was going to sell for $1,000 that he stole from the drugstore. And the guy pulled a gun to his head. So this guy got into martial arts for that reason. And, anyway, he was one of my main, you know, connections. And he called me up and he said he had something. And I said, well, you know, I'll just sell it. I won't use any. And then, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'll just, you know, smoke one because, you know, I got to test out the product. And I went over there and, you know, bought one of the big bags that I would sometimes buy. And, you know, so my first month and a half of recovery, I was stoned or on some intoxicant for 70% of the time. And I saw how my disease progressed. I did something on that couple week relapse where I think I stopped going to meetings during that time. And I saw that I did something that I had never done before. And so I crawled back to a meeting that I had been to before on a Friday night. I didn't literally crawl, but I was really hurting physically. I mean, it was a pretty intense relapse. And I went to that meeting that Friday night. And the next, I went to a Saturday morning meeting that I had been to before. And this guy was telling his story. I can't remember anything he said except that he was looking at me a whole lot during the story. And so I asked him to be my sponsor after the meeting because somebody had told me weeks earlier to get a sponsor. And I had asked one or two people, but, you know, one guy laughed and said, you know, I've been clean for 4 months. And he didn't say yes. And so this guy didn't say yes either, but he gave me a business card with the third and seventh step prayer on it. And he said, call me. And I called him and asked him again later that day, as soon as I got home, and he didn't say yes. And then I asked him a few minutes later, you know, so three times in one day I asked him and he said, yes, he said, call me every day, do a 90 and 90. And then I remember about 3 months later, we went to the park to go over the first three steps was his idea. And I just said something about, I shared something that I had shared with a girlfriend once, but I never shared with, you know, another male. And I shared stuff. It was script step stuff. And it was, you know, I was just ready to share it. And, you know, he didn't freak out. He shared something about himself. And then it was so freeing that I shared it with, you know, some other people in the big city where I was living at. And, you know, I remember, you know, one young lady at the store, kind of, I think she found it refreshing that I was just kind of, you know, sharing that with her. And, you know, and then eventually I wrote a four step, and you know, I copied the format out of a book, and I felt like they were giving me answers for the last column. You know, I had already did what I felt was the hard part, sharing. You just, and it wasn't hard, it just came out. But my first first step was like 5 hours. And I was in a hurry to work the steps with my sponsor, who had 7 years, because I wanted to finish it up with him and then work steps with these guys that had 20 or 30 years that, you know, eventually one of those guys is my sponsor now. But, yeah, I remember at the end of that fifth step, I said, I'm ready for step 6 and 7. And and my sponsor said, you have to live step 6 and 7. He pointed out something that he thought, you know, would be useful for me to change. And of course I didn't like that. And I called this guy that had 20 years and he said, well, you know, if that's not in the house, it didn't have anything to do with intoxicants, but it wasn't necessarily in alignment with, you know, anything that anyone's really dedicated to spirituality would have in their house. And, you know, so I called this guy with the 20 years and he said, well, you know, if it's not in the house, it's harder to pick up. So, you know, I made the change and, threw these items out, you know, on the way to a meeting. And then as soon as the meeting was over, I came home and looked in the garbage can in the dumpster and they were gone. But, you know, it's just like, you know, eventually I wrote an 8-step list and I wrote, you know, eventually I made some amends, and one amend was to a doctor I gave a fake name to, because, you know, I thought if his treatment didn't work, I didn't want to pay him because I don't like doctors, you know, kind of deal. And, you know, so my sponsor said, write a letter to him and send it. And, I don't think I had sent it yet. I'm almost certain I didn't. And then I heard a meeting, you know, from this guy named David, who's my current sponsor. He said, you know, we were on the 9th step. He said, direct amends means face to face. So I called up my sponsor and I said, I'm supposed to make this amend in person. He said, you're right. I was trying to protect you. To this day, I think that might be true, but I think also could be just as true that he was going to some meetings where he was hearing a little bit of a watered down message, which is not uncommon. And, you know, I don't need to make that wrong or anything, but you know, I went to that doctor and made a face-to-face amends and it was awesome. And, you know, like all my direct face-to-face financial amends, they usually said, you know, that's all right. Like that guy said, you can make a payment plan. You don't have to pay me all at once. He was more concerned about the work he had did on me, and real nice guy. And, so all those financial amends, you know, it's almost like I had to say, like with one, I said to the guy, we were going back and forth. I said, I need to do this with me. He said, okay, pay the cashier. And I walked out of there. I got instant gratification. I felt taller. I got one guy started crying. He was so happy. He was crying tears of happiness. He was so blown away that I was making a man. It was somebody I sold some stuff to. My friend's dad, an amend that, you know, no one told me I had to make, but, you know, I had a part to play in it. I didn't, you know, I didn't have the courage to say no to this guy I was hanging out with. And, you know, he said, keep doing what you're doing. He turned down the money and I walked away, and then I walked back to the door to put the money in the mailbox in an envelope. And, he opened the door again and I handed it to him and he said, keep doing what you're doing, which meant the world to me because I could tell why I was making the amend. He was not smiling. He wasn't glad to see me. He'd invite me in to sit down. He was looking at me like, I've heard stories about you. You know, what are you doing here? And, you know, so it was, you know, 1994, 2 days before my, 3 year anniversary, my first 3 year anniversary of being off intoxicants for almost 3 years. So I go over to my friend's house on a Saturday morning. I had worked overtime that morning. I wasn't thrilled about that, but I don't think I was any more pissed off than usual. I was glad I was off work. Stop by my friend's house where I had a boundary. Now, this is a guy I used to use with since age 14. So I'm 35 at this time. You know, I came into recovery when I was 32, you know, so I sit down at the kitchen table like I did two or three other times in the, you know, previous almost 3 years, and maybe five times. You know, I sit down at the kitchen table. That was my boundary. I'm just going to sit at the kitchen table, talk to my friend's mom, who was like a mom to me, because I lived there for a couple of years after my mom threw me out. After I took money from a guy who was dealing for me, and the police got involved. He went to the police. I'm sitting there at the kitchen table, and then I'm talking to my friend's mom, and my friend comes down, and I just say out of the blue, "Do you have anything?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Could I see it?" And he said, "Yeah." And I went up to his room, and I looked at it, and we went to a movie, and we came back from the movie. I said, "Let's smoke." And so we did, and I took, you know, a joint to go, and, you know, smoked on the way home and stopped somewhere else on the way home, which, you know, wasn't in alignment with, the third step, let's say. And, you know, the next morning I called my sponsor because I had developed a good habit of calling them regularly, you know, and the next morning I called my sponsor and went to a meeting and, you know, changed my dry date. I had 1 day instead of, you know, 2 years and 11 months and some change, you know, and quit quoting the literature for a few weeks. Somebody pointed out to me in you know, some of the early on original literature, you know, it said, to use an intoxicant is to die, you know, and he said, "Do you think that's true?" And I said, "Yeah, like a spiritual death or something like that." Or we talked about it. And I didn't announce at a bunch of meetings that, you know, I relapsed. I didn't say that over and over for months and months. You know, I just kind of shut up at the meetings and then about 4 months later, I was, you know, with somebody I had no business being with, and they pulled out something that, you know, is not an MA improved thing. And, you know, and they pulled the pipe out of my mouth halfway through the hit, and because a car drove by, and I said, you know, "Get out of the car." And I went and got some of this stuff, and I smoked this, you know, really terrible thing for like 8 hours that night. I wanted to go out, but I was too scared to go. I stayed in my basement apartment. I was thinking I wanted to die. And the next morning I called my sponsor and went to a meeting and quit quoting the literature for a few weeks. It almost humbled me. So that was the last, you know, that was July 3rd of 94. So my dry date's, you know, the day after. And, you know, then some changes started happening. I don't know what I was thinking, but I started meditating. My quiet times before that were prayer and reading some 12-step literature. And then I added meditation. My first time I meditated was for 2 or 3 minutes, and I was thinking all the things I could be doing. And eventually it got up to like 10 minutes, nothing earth shattering. And then eventually being part of groups, that where they meditated, I got up to, you know, 20 minutes. And I didn't really notice a whole lot. Can't say I noticed peace. But then one day I did what this book said. I did what they call meditative reading. I read real slowly. And it was a spiritual book I had read before. And I started noticing peace every day for like a week. And I switched to a different book or something, and I didn't notice peace. But, you know, then I had this moment at a restaurant where I was doing this lengthy prayer before I ate, and I felt this amazing peace inside me, or contentment or something. It just blew me away. Then I had another similar experience after a movie, maybe a month later, and then I moved out of state, and I had, from I think it was like around 1999 till 2004, like three experiences where I felt something in my chest that just blew me away. Like it was, you know, I called those spiritual experiences. I would just call them nice experiences now. There was change already in my life. You know, I was, you know, had some experiences where, you know, I was getting free from the other early on attachments, besides just not using. And, you know, I kind of want to backtrack to, you know, before I moved away, my first 7 years of recovery. I remember this one boss said, you know, he would periodically ask me if I wanted to work overtime. And this isn't about work or working overtime. It's about, you know, maybe meeting somebody someday. And I called this guy up at 33 years and I said, I'm, my foreman asked me if I want to work overtime. And I keep telling him no, you know, and I told this guy I don't need the money because my rent was real cheap and, you know, I was making good money in the teachers union. And, you know, this old timer said to me, he says, you never know when you might need that guy, but that foreman, you know, he says, why don't you work a half an hour for him or an hour for him one time? And I never did it, but you know, I sometimes think about that. You know, I don't really want to push people out of my life. You know, I want to kind of keep them at a distance if they're playing a role that I'm resistant to the story I have about the role they're playing. But I just, you know, I might meet that person someday, you know, another time I was at a meeting in those first several years and I came in late to the meeting and this old timer asked me after the meeting, how you doing? I said, I'm resentful. He said, about what? I said, somebody told me, you know, tisk, you're late. And that's not what the lady told me. She said, tisk, you're late. I had to make it sound a little bit worse, you know. How else are you going to play the role of the victim? Dishonesty. I think that's the only way I can play the role of the victim, which I don't know if I have any recovery. I thought I did for a while, but, it's, and the guy said to me, that's not even a pimple. Like he right-sized it for me. As soon as he said that, it was just like, yeah, it's not so bad. So, you know, one time I heard a guy at a meeting say, you know, thanks for putting up with me. He was talking about working with these coworkers, and it sounded like they were talking all day and he was working. And I don't know why he said that, but, you know, I sometimes use that when I feel that I don't want to make an amend because I realize I might not be able to change the behavior or the attitude. So instead of making an amend, I'll just say, thanks for putting up with me. So, you know, I started going to other fellowships to work on other things. After about 3 years, had some pretty good disciplines in some areas of my life that I felt good about. But, you know, I heard a guy once in a meeting say, you know, the first thing that recovers is the ego. It seems like everything good in my life, my mind has gotten a hold of it and created like a false identification out of it, like a false identification label, like I'm this or that. And I'm just, you know, like, I'm no big deal. I'm just a spoke in the wheel. And sometimes I feel like I'm a broken spoke. So, you know, like 5 years ago, I thought I had a little something, you know, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, I thought I had a little something going on. And, you know, 25 years ago, I thought I had a little something going on in the name of spirituality or whatever. But for the last several months, things have things are quite different than they were. You know, some people know a little bit about it, but I had some moments where, you know, I've done the, you know, gotten real close to doing the opposite of self-care. You know, twice in July and once at the end of September, once in October 2nd. You know, I've had some moments of huge resistance, huge fear, like, and big time trying to control others to avoid, you know, uncomfortable feelings. You know, a lot of conversations I can't handle. Like there was a period of time where the only thing I could handle was calling up somebody and being quiet and reading something that I like. I can't hear too good. And like all this stuff that's kind of come up the last, you know, several months, I'm starting to look back and, you know, it's been there for a long time, just not with as much intensity. So, I don't have anything. I don't have anything going on over here. I can't put a label to it. But, you know, after about 12 years of making meetings, you know, I kind of lost some of the enthusiasm I had the first several years. And, you know, then I heard a message outside of these rooms that blew me away. And I've been enjoying that at times for, a lot of years now. And, you know, so my mind, based on some of the things that have happened in the last several months, just questions everything. Like everything. I don't want to say everything, but like all the spiritual and healthy stuff, or much of it. So, I thought I was in a deep well of not knowing. Even though, you know, I could look at certain areas that have changed. You know, I could take a quiet time now. I can remember some quotes, and I can, sometimes not react. Sometimes try to put some intention inside the body. But anyway, thanks for putting up with me. That's all I got. Thank you so much.